I'm going to be presenting on the social support and health issues among formerly incarcerated women in New York. And she received her master's degree. She's from a Department of Social Medical Sciences, Columbia University. She received her master's degree in public health degree at Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health. And her areas of interest include mass incarceration, immigrant health, community health, and community-based participatory research. So join me as I welcome Ms. Chang.
Hi everyone, my name is Yvonne and I will be presenting on family type relationships and support among formerly incarcerated women in New York City. This presentation is based on research that I conducted for my master's thesis. This is just a brief outline of the presentation. I'm probably going to skip most of the background since the previous presenters did such a great job covering things. I just also wanted to share my data analysis methods, findings and discussion, as well as some implications of this research for public health. I'm just going to skip the general trends on incarcerated women. I do want to focus, however, a little bit on statistics on incarcerated women. Just want to stress that, and again, many of these incarcerated women are mothers and the primary caregivers of their children. And while incarcerated men often rely on the mothers of their children for child care, incarcerated women usually rely on other relatives or friends. Therefore, maternal incarceration places stress on the alternative caregivers of their children as well as the children. The alternate caregivers have to take on the additional responsibilities, and the children of incarcerated women are at higher risk of behavioral problems and juvenile justice involvement. The prisoner reentry challenges that men and women face upon release are pretty similar. However, their family responsibilities do differ because of these caregiver roles. Therefore, some researchers, Selena and colleagues, suggest that women's incarceration is best understood in the context of the family's need for resources. So I use secondary qualitative data from Dr. Valera's study on the smoking behaviors of formerly incarcerated women for my research. And you can see the recruitment procedures of this study here. As you can see, we recruited all participants from the Bronx. My qualitative data consisted of 30 in-depth interview transcripts. Each interview lasted approximately 2 hours, and all participants were compensated $40 for their time. The eligibility criteria for Dr. Valera's study are as shown. You can see that in order to participate, women had to be current smokers and be experiencing mental health problems. This is a table of participant characteristics within the study. The demographics kind of reflect the female criminal justice population as a whole. As you can see, the majority of women in the sample were Black and Latina, so women of color. Most of them had a high school education or less, and the majority of them are mothers. We also have some additional information related to their health status. 4 of the participants identified as HIV positive, over half of them are on Medicaid, and 20% had disability support. Our sample also captures a variety of incarceration histories. As you can see, we were not limited to jail-only or prison-only populations. So the specific aims of my research were first to describe how formerly incarcerated women perceive and experience family-type relationships and support, and secondly, to develop a support map that shows how they use their networks to access different kinds of support. Basically, I wanted to find out who these women are relying on for what kinds of support. I decided to focus on social support because research in various fields of public health has shown that it has protective effects. Social support is defined as the psychological and material resources provided to an individual by the members of their social network, and I decided that I wanted to focus on family members. Support can be classified as various types. Emotional support would include acting as someone's confidant. Instrumental support includes financial and material support, such as housing or childcare. Informational support would include advice, and companionship support would involve providing some kind of social interactions to the individual. There are 2 main perspectives on how social support acts as a protective factor. From the stress coping perspective, support basically helps people to cope better under stress. And from the main effects perspective, the supportive exchange has some kind of direct impact on the stressful situation itself. So this is totally relevant to the criminal justice population because family support has been shown to reduce and delay recidivism among individuals with a history of incarceration. So I just want to spend some time talking about my content analysis process just to clarify how I was looking at these overall trends. I used directed content analysis to analyze family relationships and support. This approach uses existing theory and prior research to identify key concepts as coding categories and to also determine the operational definitions of each code. I created this slide to help illustrate my actual process. Shown here is a section of the Excel spreadsheet that I used to analyze family relationships. So as you can see from column A, all of the data shown on this slide is pulled from the same transcript. We went through line-by-line coding for all family relationships, so the raw data is all placed in column J, and I used a different definition of family members. I defined family members as all individuals with strictly personal or informal relationships with the participants, so not just biological family. As you can see in column C, I did not aggregate group and individual level relationships because the participants described them in different ways. I also categorized each relationship into a different types of family members. In column F, you can see that three categories are represented from this single transcript. B and S stands for biological and stepfamily, C and G stands for children and grandchildren, and PFA stands for peers, friends, and acquaintances. So in addition to categorizing into different groups of family members, I also coded each relationship as positive, negative, or neutral. Positive relationships were the ones that improved the participants' reentry process in some way and described some level of closeness and supportive behavior, while negative relationships were the ones that caused the participants distress or anxiety or enabled destructive behaviors. Finally, the neutral relationships were the ones that were just mentioned but not really described or described kind of indifferently or ambivalently. So after this initial coding process, our research team met to review codes and resolve any discrepancies. The second phase of this process was to quantify some aspects of the data so that I could look at overall trends. Basically, I counted the number of distinct relationships in each transcript, as well as the number of positive, negative, and neutral. So you can see in columns B through E, I did this overall, as well as by family category, so children and grandchildren, biological and stepfamily, and so on. I then used these counts to generate descriptive statistics. So here are some of my findings on family relationships. I was able to identify 347 distinct family relationships across all 30 transcripts, and seven categories of family members emerged from this data: biological and stepfamily, children and grandchildren, significant others' families, peers, friends, and acquaintances, God, and church. And shown here is the numerical breakdown. I just want to also state that the number of family relationships is not the actual number of family members, firstly because I didn't aggregate group level and individual level relationships, and secondly because the number of people in any given group was just unspecified, so there's really no way to tell. So this slide shows some examples of positive relationships that were described. So again, these descriptions generally included communication, some kind of motivation, or expression of support. So here the first participant talks about calling her sister in California when she's dealing with a stressful situation. This slide also happens to illustrate the general trend of female family members being described as support providers. So on this slide, the three participants mention their sisters and their mother. This slide shows some examples of negative relationships. Again, these descriptions generally included estrangement from family members, resentment, particularly on the part of children. So, for example, the first participant on this slide describes how her oldest son is kind of like in a strained relationship with her because of her history of incarceration. And some women also mentioned abusive relationships, such as the second participant. This second quote also illustrates how negative relationships can complicate participants' ability to rely on their family members for support. So the second participant actually had to choose between staying with her children and enduring domestic violence from her significant other or leaving her children to take care of her own needs. So in the end, she had to leave her children and her significant other behind to take care of herself. Four of these participants also mentioned being in same-sex relationships in the context of their significant others. These women did not all identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, or really discuss these identities. However, three out of four of them did talk about exploring their sexuality, as with the first quote, in the context of these relationships. Overall, these descriptions of significant others were pretty much appearing in similar terms, whether the partner in question was male or female. So, as I mentioned before, I also coded relationships with God and church separately. This slide shows relationships with God, and descriptions of such relationships were described more introspectively. Many of these women described prayer or some kind of self-reflective process. So the first participant is describing trying to process her previous relationships so that she's able to move on and forgive them and herself. I felt that these relationships with God are a marker of the participant's emotional or personal progress. So it's kind of like a relationships with themselves. In contrast, relationships with church were described more actively and involved some kind of more outward community-seeking type behavior. So a couple of participants actually mentioned having sung in the choir previously. Both relationships with God and church were described in mostly positive terms. However, more participants did cite relationships with God than with church, and I felt that this might have something to do with the inward versus outward behavior. So these relationships also have an impact on support, first in terms of the quantity of relationships. As I mentioned before, I used an expanded definition of family, so the actual number of support providers within the network is increased, as well as the quality. So positive and negative relationships are pretty kind of fluid categories and complicated, but women who described having a negative relationship with their family member might be less willing to ask them for help when they need it. So the second part of my analysis was concerned with family support, and I used Tracy and Whitaker's social network mapping approach to accomplish this. The first aspect of this approach is to assess the structure of the network by creating a diagram of the social network members, and the second aspect is the social support grid, which assesses the supportive functions of the network. Rather than using Tracy and Whitaker's existing mapping grid, I decided to modify this approach so it would better fit my specific aims. This is the family support framework that I used in content analysis. As you can see, I coded for support provided by family members, provided to family members, and expected from family members. In addition to these general categories, I also classified each support exchange as emotional, instrumental, informational, or companionship support, and many passages of the data represented multiple categories. And this general process was the same as with relationships, where the first phase involved coding and the second involved generating descriptive statistics. So finally, I combined this relationship and support data to create this social support map that visualizes their network. So in the center of this diagram are formerly incarcerated women, which represent the participants, and the seven categories of family members are surrounding them. You can also see in this map which relationships I included in each category. So for example, significant other's families, I included in-laws, significant other's children, significant other's exes, and other family members, their exes' current partners, and their children's paternal relatives. And peers, friends, and acquaintances, I also included inmates, support group members, parents and children's friends, and foster parents of their children. So the most frequently discussed in terms of supportive relationships were biological and step-family, children and grandchildren, and significant others, which is not surprising since these were generally closer relationships. However, in terms of the number of exchanges actually described, the top three categories were biological and step-family, children and grandchildren, and peers, friends, and acquaintances. So in addition to this categorical data, you can see this map also describes the inflow and outflow of support. So the inward-facing arrows are exchanges where the family members are providing support to the participants, and the outward-facing arrows represent exchanges where the family members are providing, the participants are providing support to their family members. So these arrows can only show the directionality and not the magnitude of support. Obviously, the type, the level of reciprocity, the duration, and the consistency of support being provided will vary across categories. However, there was an overall trend where participants did receive more support than they provided, and their expectations of support from all of these family members were overall very low. The one exception to this trend is children and grandchildren, where instrumental support that the participants provided to their children exceeded that they received, which is not surprising, again, because of these caregiver responsibilities. However, in terms of emotional support, their relationships with their children and grandchildren were much more reciprocal. So as you can see, 5 out of these 7 categories show reciprocal support between the participants and their family members, and so the participants' responsibilities to each of these groups is an important consideration in this overall support network. So I'm just going to end with some implications of this research for public health practice. I think that this support map would be a useful assessment tool for people who are looking for opportunities for family support intervention. It would also increase the social capital of formerly incarcerated individuals and their social networks. Secondly, the diversity of the social network illustrated by this map will help professionals to develop more realistic and effective reentry plans, just because it provides them with a more inclusive and holistic view of formerly incarcerated individuals' relationships and responsibilities to their social networks. And finally, I think that a similar approach would be very useful to create a professional support map to include relationships with institutions. So as I mentioned previously, I did exclude all formal relationships from the scope of my analysis. However, institutions such as parole and the healthcare system are very important to formerly incarcerated individuals, and it would be very useful to provide an overall assessment that includes those relationships as well. And just finally, I want to acknowledge all my team members for all their help and support, especially Dr. Valera, who's over there. And thank all of you for your time.